Game On 2FM with Green Fern, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green, it's Tuesday the 10th of August and this is Game On. Coming up today, Harrington is home. We'll be live to Portland Row for Kelly's return.
I have no tears left to cry. Like normally I'm like crying all the time, like, but they're all bawling their eyes out, so I'm really happy with that. Like it's them instead of me this time.
Speaking of homecomings, Ina Reardon and David Gillick are with us with their own Tokyo takeaways.
Well, it's your first Olympics and yes, you've qualified, but you seem to be enjoying the whole experience.
It's great crack, like, yeah, it's fun over here, like, meeting a lot of new people and superstars walking around, like, and it's, you're a bit shell-shocked at the start, but you get, like, well, I'm not used to it yet.
Michael McKillop knows all about winning gold for Ireland. He'll give us his hopes as he sets off for his fourth Paralympics.
And Rio de Janeiro is going to hear the Irish national anthem. It's Michael McKillop heading for the line. And for the third Paralympic Games, it will be gold for McKillop. He's the champion on the treble.
Plus, there's this small matter of Lionel Messi touching down in Paris. Mark Langdon brings us up to speed.
We're just going to break away and bring you some breaking news regarding Messi. He has fully agreed the terms on a 2-year contract to join Paris Saint-Germain. So there you go, Lionel Messi agreeing to join PSG.
Well, he's been pictured wearing the shirt today, so there is no going back. If you want to get in touch and text us, you can do so on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
Now, Ina Reardon, as I mentioned, is with me in studio. Ian, welcome back from Tokyo. How was it?
Good evening, Marie. Yeah, it was good to be back, all right. Yeah, I got back earlier today. Yesterday. Today. I'm not quite sure.
Well, I think you've told us all that we need to know now. It's difficult getting back into the time zones.
We lose a day on the way back, but it was certainly an Olympics like no other on so many levels, not least all the COVID loopholes that had to be consistently jumped through. But I felt all along, going even go back to last year and even this year when there was all the doubts about it, I said, look, these Olympics should happen. They should go ahead for the sake of the athletes. And I think that was being proved right. I mean, of course, there was a few COVID scares here and there, but I don't think it turned into the big COVID virus situation that we thought it was going to be. Having said that, there was a lot of difficulties for the athletes, being limited to the village, not having to go home after your event, and a few cases where athletes had to miss their event. So the COVID thing made it a certainly more demanding Olympics. But I think from a sporting perspective and the way the world engaged with us, it was well worth going ahead with. Yes.
Yeah, I think people really enjoyed it. It was a great distraction from reality. It was something I think everybody needed at a time when things were tough for a lot of people. And Kelly Harrington did say that on quite a number of occasions. She was delighted to make people smile. David Gillick made a lot of people smile as well. He's with us now on the line. David, welcome back. How are you doing?
Cheers, Marie. I'm all right. I'm hanging in there.
tough going home now to a house with three children, and the fact that you've been away as well for a while. I'd say there's plenty of jobs.
Plenty of jobs, yeah. There was a long list put in place and slowly getting through it today. But no, look, it's good to be home. And I like what Ian was saying there as well. Like, you know, it was a very busy couple of weeks. Once it kicks off, you're full on into it. And it's great that we just had success throughout, really, and finish on a high there with Kelly on Sunday. So yeah, back to reality now.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I think a lot of people will be tuning in to the news and tuning in to lots of radio stations today to hear a bit of a flavour of Portland Row. Kelly is home. She was getting an open top bus through her home area and it was brilliant pictures. Let's have a flavour of her day.
It means the world to be able to bring back a goal, but still, like, my mentality is anybody who steps through the ropes and makes a team on Olympic Games is a champion, you know, like, regardless of whether you bring a medal back or not, you know. For me, it's not always about winning medals and stuff like that. It's about getting through the doors of a boxing club. For all those young people out there, for the teenagers out there, it's about stepping through the doors first and meeting people and becoming part of a family then. And then whatever happens after that is a bonus, really. Do you know, like, boxing it's an escape for a lot of people. And I just hope that with the success that we've had out here, that we get a lot of funding now to go into local boxing clubs and help support local boxing clubs, because that's what we need. bigger picture, what is next? I don't know what's next, because just take it day by day. I haven't, like, I'm only home now, so I'll have to wait and I'll have to speak to Bernard and speak to my club coach and see what's next. Not done yet. I know I'm going grey and all, but like, I still have a few years left in me, you know. I'm not done yet.
Are you thinking at this stage, Paris or pro?
I don't know what to do yet. I'll see. I'm thinking Paris. I'm thinking pro. I don't know what to do. It depends on. Look, I'm at the age now. It depends on the offer that I'm going to get. So we'll see. We'll see what offers come my way, and I'll do whatever's best for me, and we'll take it from there.
Well, she's doing the right thing anyway, Ian. She's not ruling anything out, and there will be so many options for her, but it's going to be a difficult decision, as she said herself. She's not exactly 21, she's 31. These next few years are going to be so important to her. She has to try and figure out how she can, I guess, set herself up for life, really.
Yeah, it is. And look, first of all, congratulations again to Kelly. I've been lucky enough to see a few Olympian champions out there, and we're talking earlier on. I mean, they're all different in their own right, and Katie was a pioneer in so many ways. But when Kelly speaks, it's all coming from the heart. And the way she spoke after that final, I mean, she obviously there was a sense of relief, but it was a real eloquence about it as well. And she was talking about being a role model, not so much to others, but, you know, everybody be a role model to yourself, and this kind of philosophical stuff. And so I think she's got a very bright career still ahead of her in boxing, and I think she does go professional. There's potential there to set up a few big fights. But Paris, less than 3 years away now, and the thought of defending that title would be epic. I mean, I don't think anyone's not many women boxers have defended their titles, and that would mean that Ireland have won all three of the weight divisions in that. Well, sorry, except 2016, of course. It's a tough one, but I think she's right to take her time. And but I think the boxing, it's only, 5 years ago now since boxing was in a very difficult place as well. And don't forget, okay, Aidan Walsh did well to get a bronze medal. I think Kurt Walker was quite unlucky. Brendan Irvine, I think, lost to the eventual champion again. So boxing could have come home with 3 or 4 medals, which would have, you know, put a whole new perspective on that sport as well. I still think Rory McIlroy, I was there when he missed his putt for outright bronze. Then you think about Natalia Coyle, you think about Reese McClenahan, and you think about young Jack Woolley in the taekwondo. So we could have easily come home with 6 or 7 medals, and I think that would certainly have been an all-time achievement for Irish Olympic sport. But it's important as well not to get carried away with this, and that's at the same time we're saying Paris only 3 years away, and you have to look ahead to think about where all the medals come in 3 years' time. But I suppose, to answer your question, what should Kelly do? Well, if I was her, to be perfectly honest, I think I'd probably say amateur, but that's probably easy for me to say.
What would you do, David? You do, David Gillick, as someone who was at an Olympic Games and was an amateur athlete?
Yeah, look, it's a great question, and I think Kelly's right. You know, she's got to take her time over. Like, at her age now, she's looking long term. She's looking, okay, how do I maximise this, and how do I kind of, you know, let's be honest, create a bit of a future for herself long term? And whether that's going pro, and she referred to an offer, I think it comes down to numbers, really. And if she gets a good enough offer to turn pro, I think it could be something that would be very hard to turn down. She's obviously got to look at her own game, like, you know, in terms of like what when that transfers into the pro game. You know, what impressed me was, like, throughout the whole kind of Olympics, you know, in terms of kind of like her orthodox stance, then she's able to switch it to southpaw when she's in a fight. It caused a lot of confusion for her opponents. And I think if you can bring that into the pro game, also, you know, the way she managed herself, even in the final, from, like, you know, losing the first round, then coming back and winning the fight unanimously is incredible. Like, you know, but again, like, that's all kind of, I suppose, in reality, what needs to be done, but what happens now going long term? And I think, yeah, like, I just feel where she's at and the journey that she's been on. I think if there was an offer there where she could give herself a bit of comfort over the next couple of years, that could be something. But the other side of that as well, from like an Olympic point of view, they'd be desperate to kind of hang on to her in a way as well, you know. And I think whatever Sport Ireland do, or whatever offer could be on the table from them, like, they don't want to lose someone who could potentially, as Ian said, go into Paris and maybe, you know, defend her title. But also, I think what she does for the sport, and particularly, you know, women in sport, her kind of her community and everything she stands for, I think is really, really positive. And, you know, you wouldn't like to lose that from an amateur perspective going forward. I think there's a lot of value that she can add to sport in Ireland. And I think she just needs to enjoy it. It's probably all those questions when you're straight off the plane, or a little bit like, she's probably in that whirlwind of what has just happened, and probably just needs a bit of time to kind of soak it all up and take it all in.
I guess the flip side of that, David, is that because she has so much going for her, her personality wise, her story, her background, she's so marketable as well, you know, just from a pure sales point of view. There's so many people that would like to attach themselves to her. And I guess something else as well that's worth touching on, Ian, is that boxing is really grueling. So her lifestyle is going to be really, really grueling while she's doing that. And it's how long is that sustainable for as well? Like, how long do you want to be doing that to yourself?
Yeah, I suppose, look, the bottom line here, Kelly just owes nothing to anyone except herself now. So that's why she's totally entitled to the decision. I think it's David made a good point there that Sport Ireland, now I know she's on the 40 grand a year, that's the podium funding, so that's basically her salary taken care of for the year. But I think they used to have a gold medal bonus, I'm not sure if that's still there, but I think David's right, this should be maybe Sport Ireland should begin sounding, saying, Kelly, what can we do for you, whatever you want, we'll make it happen. And that, I think that possibly could sway it for Kelly, because there's only 3 years, and I don't forget, like, up to about 2 months ago, Kelly wasn't even sure if she was even going to qualify for Tokyo, because there was so much doubt about the qualifying tournament in Paris, and she had two major wrist injuries, which meant she missed the best part of 2020. And then there was the whole going out there so long in advance. She was out there longer than any athlete, the boxers were. They were out there for nearly 40 days altogether. So that homesickness, and she said herself, like, staring at the four walls most of the day, I mean, it would have driven anyone mad. So her focus was incredible. And look, she's got the gold medal now, and that's why it's so well deserved, and that's why she deserves all the praises that come her way.
Yeah, I know lots of people are saying, wouldn't it be great to see Kelly Harrington fight Katie? But look, I don't know. I don't know if I would like that. I heard someone say you need to have a bad guy in a fight. There probably isn't one. I can't see Katie Taylor being the bad guy or Kelly. So, David, is it something you would like to see?
It's a great question. And, from a sporting point of view, you would love to see it, you know. It's kind of funny when you go back years and obviously the same kind of weight category and coming up through the ranks together and stuff like that. It would be one of those. But the hard thing is they're two very nice people. But when you put them in the ring, it can completely change. And I don't know, maybe that's something in the long term. But I couldn't, like, you know the way boxing operates in terms of pros, like they don't want to fight each other until they kind of really have to, and that creates an element of the buzz. But I think right now it's very much like the other side of the kind of pro game as well. I think when you look at what, say, Katie has done and the profile, like, there probably is promoters out there thinking, okay, well, you know, I'd love another kind of female coming in because of the success that Katie has had. And maybe that's Kelly, like, you know, and maybe that's the way they look at it. Maybe they could kind of put the two of them on a journey and hopefully meet at the end of it. Who knows? But it's exciting. And I think that's the great thing is, like, we've got two kind of female boxers that are top of the world, so to speak. So, it'll be an interesting time. But I completely kind of agree there with what Ian is saying. It's like, you know what, she deserves everything comes away from the journey that she's been on. And it'll be a really kind of interesting couple of months. And like you said as well, I think outside the ring, there's a lot of opportunities. And they're probably already, I'm sure, I know she has an agent, I'm sure the phone is red hot at the moment with people trying to get a piece of her. And I hope she does kind of maximise that, because I think it's well deserved.
Yeah, it'd be a great book as well. I'd be, if I was a publisher, I'd be like, Kelly's story, time for Christmas. I'd love to read it.
And David, like, you've came back from an Olympic Games. Your story is a little bit different than Kelly's, because she's obviously won the gold medal, but still
yeah,
at the same
very
time,
different. Thanks for that, Marie.
a little bit different. But, you know, at the same time, there is a come down from an Olympic Games as well that takes a bit of an adjustment.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And like, people talk about the Olympic blues, and it will happen. It will kind of hit her, it'll hit the whole team. And, you know, it's a weird scenario when you come back. I can remember coming back from Beijing and, yeah, I didn't perform that well, but it was almost like, right, you know, people who won the medals go out first, and then people who perform well, and then the rest of you is just falling behind. And you're almost like in the airport, get me out of here. And it is that, because, you know, Ian mentioned there how long they've been away and everything's been structured and they're all working towards that goal, and then it starts and then you get through and you keep going on, and next minute you win a medal. And then it's all over and you come home. And, like, there will be a lot of, like, buzz around various people for the first couple of days. But then reality kind of kicks in. It's like, okay, what am I doing now? Do you get on a holiday? Do you reevaluate your goals and then start building? And, you know, some athletes will struggle with that, because everything over the last, say, particularly the last year to 2 years, it's been very, very structured. And then it just stops. So, you know, that's where you rely on the people that are closest to you, your coaches and your family and friends. And, you know, a lot of people will want a bit of a break. They maybe want to get away from it all and just kind of a bit of quiet time. and then it's rebuilding again. The interesting thing is, like, you know, with Paris only 3 years away, like, you're straight into a cycle almost immediately. And even from the OFI's perspective, they're already looking at flights, they're already looking at accommodations and holding camps and all this sort of stuff. So even from, like, creating their long list of who's potentially going to go, that's already started, which is amazing, really. But it will be a quick turnaround. You know, you're straight in, even in athletics, like next year we have Europeans, you have World Champs, and there's also a Commonwealth thrown in there as well. So it's crazy next 12 months.
Yeah, it really is. And I've actually seen, I have seen Nadia Power out running, and I saw Phil Healy as well putting up on her Instagram that they're back training as well. So Everyone's getting straight back into it. But one person who isn't getting straight back into it for a little while anyway is Kelly Harrington, because she is busy at her own homecoming. Samantha Labrary of RT News is there for us. Samantha, is it as exciting as it looks on the television?
Oh, Marie, it really is. I don't think I have the words to describe the atmosphere down here today. You may have seen the footage on the news today, but from early on, people lined the streets around Portland Row and the rest of Dublin's north inner city. I was driving in here from home earlier on, and you had people outside pubs, people outside their houses gathering from 2 or 3 hours before the bus was due, pitching their spot with their folding chairs. And there was children up on roofs of cars. It kind of reminded me of Italia 90 and my own experience of it. And there was children kind of up on roofs, and everyone, the place was lined, every child dressed in green. You know, it looks like St. Patrick's Day here. There was one American woman who I met, and she'd actually followed a guy dressed as St. Patrick down to the street to find out what was going on. She'd arrived here thinking this was St. Patrick's Day, and she's found out about Kelly Harrington. But the people were just so thrilled. I mean, this homecoming has meant so much to them. You've seen all the coverage from Portland Row over the past week or so, and how much this event has meant to the community. And even before Kelly was even near a medal, this place was decked out. Apparently they cleared out carrels of their green, white and orange bunting weeks ago. Every single house has it outside. There's flags, there's posters, and today they've added it. There was children with gold medals around their necks. There was a newborn baby just a couple of weeks old with their gold medal asleep, missing the whole thing. And of course, we were saying earlier on that Kelly Harrington was a newborn when Italia 90 happened. But, you know, these scenes will be recalled in those terms in the future. The highlight, I suppose, was 5 o'clock when the bus, the open top bus with her on board and her family, turned onto Portland Row. They were chanting her name. They were screaming, and you could see she was overcome by the emotion of it all. And I mean, you have to remember, she hasn't seen and hasn't been here to feel or experience what's been going on here, but you could feel the pride, you could feel the joy. And as she passed by her family home, the one we've seen on the news so often over the past couple of weeks, loads of her family members were outside, and she was wiping away the tears. Now, she travelled throughout the rest of the Dublin's north inner city, around Summerhill, Ballybock, a couple of those areas. But so good was the reception on Portland Row that she came around for a second time, and they gave her another reception. And at the end of it, someone threw up Simba from The Lion King, Teddy. She held it up just like in the movie. Hakuna Matata, of course, being her mantra throughout this.
Oh, Sam, it sounds absolutely fabulous. And one thing I've noticed just from listening to the different reports and, you know, people that you're interviewing, everybody has so many nice things to say about her. And it's one thing when you hear journalists and all the rest and commentators mention things, but when it's their own community and the sound bites and what they're saying is just beautiful.
It really does seem like there's something about Kelly Harrington. I met her for the first time in 2018 out in Dublin Airport, when she wasn't as well known as she will be for the rest of her life, coming back with her medal then. And even then, she's very down to earth, very accessible, very honest about her feelings about things, and her family as well. I mean, I sat on Portland Row yesterday while I was reporting from here, and over the course of an hour and a half, there was a constant stream of people pulling up on the side of the road, knocking on her door, most of them strangers, dropping in gifts, wishing them well, looking for selfies. And they have made themselves accessible. They have been honest about her journey, about how much it means to all of them. Everybody on this street, I think, feels like they own a piece of Kelly Harrington. You know, that she was born and reared here in the shadow of the Five Lamps. It's an area, as many people were saying around here, that's in the news sometimes for all the wrong reasons. And this has just been such a tonic for them. In contrast, they've been able to celebrate, you know, the community that they know that they have here, the boxing clubs and the work that the locals do. All of that is something that they've been able to showcase over the past week or two, and they've been able to put out their best foot forward and show the rest of Ireland what actually Dublin's north inner city is all about.
Well, thank you so much. You've painted great pictures for us there, and Kelly Harrington has definitely transformed where she's from. We're going to take a very, very quick break and then we'll be back with more Olympics chat.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I'm joined by Ina Reardon here in studio and on the line by David Gillick. David, just to move our chat on now to athletics, because now that the dust has settled, it is time for the debriefs. And when you look back at how our Irish athletics team got on, do you think it was a successful Games for them just as a whole?
I wouldn't say it was a successful Games. I think, you know, you've got to look at it maybe more kind of individually and see how people got on in relation to their own kind of times and season and stuff like that. I think, you know, you have to bear in mind that we, like, as much as we had a relatively large team going to Olympic Games in terms of track and field, a lot of our athletes qualified in kind of quota places, which, you know, and no discredit to them, is an amazing achievement to get there. But when you go to, I suppose, the elite of the elite, I think there's a few people maybe would kind of have come home with arguably a reality check in terms of where they are in relation to that level. Like, it's very easy to kind of go, okay, let's look at, you know, our top ranked athletes and how do they perform. But, you know, if you were to say kind of, you know, Brendan Boyce 10th in the 50k walk, a very, very good performance when you factor in all the conditions and things like that. So I think he'd be very happy with that. I think, you know, Tom Barr, I think he was 9th. I think he was our best perform athlete individually. And I think, again, it's kind of like he would have wanted more. He would have wanted to be in that final. But you look at his event and we had world records. That was probably arguably the greatest final in the history of athletics. It'd be interesting to see what Ian thinks about that. But for me, it was just, I was blown away by the level in that event. I still think Tom is capable of getting to a final in that sort of top 8, but it didn't happen, you know, for him. And again, you're always kind of, you know, up against it when an athlete produces an amazing time, and that's what happened in his event. An Italian guy kind of pipped him for that last spot. But look, overall, I think it's very mixed. I think there was good performances from the relay, obviously making that final, which gives the whole kind of area of relays and where relays are kind of moving, because it is something World Athletics are trying to enhance more of, more mixed relays, because it's very kind of spectator friendly, if you like. And I think when we have a team that gets to a final, that creates huge opportunities going forward. So that team's already qualified for Oregon next year for the World Champs. So I think a lot of athletes will be targeting that, as opposed to, you know, they might be a little bit shy of individual time. So that gives huge, huge opportunity. Like, you know, the other kind of aspect of that is the impact that had, say, on Phil Healy. You know, she has a relay first and then comes out and has to do it individual, and that's a really difficult position to be in. So again, it's kind of managing that a little bit going forward. But look, I think overall it was mixed. Like I said, there was a few positives in there. I think like Andrew Coskren, I was very impressed with. I think the way he handled himself in the heat of the 1500, and even the way his interview went afterwards, he was very much like, oh, I didn't expect to be here, now I'm here, now I have to go and reevaluate. But, you know, how he managed his race in terms of what he did and put himself in contention, I think was admirable. I think, you know, when you're not highly ranked and you come into a situation where it's not always about times, it's about tactics, I thought he handled that very, very well. Whereas maybe some athletes didn't kind of put themselves aggressively in races and give themselves every opportunity to qualify, I thought he handled that very well. But even after semi-final, like he virtually ran equal to PB, and he was still a little bit like, I've ran 3:35, I think it was, and he's like, he's out the back door. So again, for someone like that, I think he knows where he is now, and hopefully he can take something from that and move on. And that's exactly what it's all about. What do you do now next, particularly going into next year, where you have a Europeans and you have a Worlds, and particularly that Europeans is a huge opportunity for people, you know, going forward. But obviously it's now 2 years in front of kind of Paris, so it'll be a huge kind of benchmark going forward, I think, is next year.
Ian, I don't think anybody expects the Irish athletics teams to be going to Olympic Games and coming home with bags full of medals. But at the same time, it would be nice to get to a place where the Irish athletics teams are going to major championships and in contention to win medals realistically, where they're contesting and it feels like something that's realistic. And I know that you've probably had this conversation after several Olympic Games over the years, And you would like to see Ireland in a position where they are learning from games, moving on and improving. And it doesn't feel like we're there yet.
No, exactly, Marie. And that's when I said at the outset, so of all the other medal hopes we had, there was at least 7 or 8 across the different sports. And I just had a line here. This is track and field only in Tokyo. So there was 83 countries won medals out of, 243 different countries won medals. There was 3 world records, 12 Olympic records, 28 area records, and then 151 national records. So there's 2 points there. They were extremely competitive Olympics, but also lots of different countries, 43 different countries winning medals. So it's not like USA are winning everything or the Russians are winning everything. I think we saw more smaller countries winning medals this year. Bahamas won both 400 metres. You had an Indian man winning the javelin. You had obviously the Italian winning the 100 metres. So there's a big shake-up this year. But you're right, there was no Irish medal hope on the track. The last medal Ireland won on the track was Sonia in 2000. They obviously had Rob in the walk in London. That's a road event. And that was obviously when he sort of third place. And I do. I think the question needs to be asked, broader question now, what needs to change? What can we do to change this? And I think somebody has to be accountable here. And that's why I think Athletics Ireland has some hard questions to ask themselves, to look in the mirror and say, what do we need to do here? Do we set up a task force? Should there be a sort of a review committee? I tried to contact Athletics Ireland to get some reaction.
We put in a request as well for somebody from Athletics Ireland to join the conversation, but we didn't hear back.
Yeah, just to get some assessment of is there a vision for Paris? Do they need more coaches? Do they need to invest in the clubs? Do they need to invest in athletes? Because I think the athletes are trying their best, and it's not like boxing where they can all train together, or rowing where they can all be based in one camp. Athletics, obviously, it's a much broader sport, but I get the feeling they're all pulling in different directions. You look at the Dublin Track Club, one of the best things to come out of athletics in the last few years. That's Andrew Coscarin. Runner as well. So they're doing really good things, but they're outside of the athletics loop. Athletics Ireland didn't want anything to do with them, whereas they should be bringing them in and say, what more can we do to you? And I think the investment needs to be more in coaching now, and in clubs possibly as well, to get the numbers up. But unfortunately, I'm not seeing that in Athletics Ireland, and I didn't see it after Rio. I didn't see it after London. I didn't see it after Beijing. Somebody come down and say, look, what do we need to do to win a medal in track and field again? And there's no strategic plan or task force saying this is what we need to do. And I guarantee we'll be having the same conversation post Paris.
David, what do you think? Because you obviously have come through a system and have experienced being in a situation where things didn't go to plan for you at an Olympic Games, and you wanted to go to another Olympic Games and progress and do better.
Yeah, look, I completely agree with Ian there. I think, you know, we will be having the same conversation post Paris. And I think we need to really sit down and kind of a good debrief, and there has to be questions asked. And I think that word accountability is very, very important. You know, it's how you build high performance. And what is high performance? Is high performance an administrative role, or is it more of a coaching role? And I think we're still kind of stumbling around that. We're not really sure how to implement it and what exactly we're trying to achieve from it. When you look at some of the sports, particularly from Ireland, you look at boxing, you look at rowing, where we picked up medals. One thing that really struck me was the inclusion of, say, in boxing, club coaches. And Kelly referred to that from her own club, and she even referenced it there in one of the sound bites. You know, she's got a club coach, and then she obviously has Zora and all the guys in terms of the high performance unit in boxing. But they seem to have kind of married that very well. So, you know, that cohesion between both groups, the communication, and obviously putting a plan in place seems to have worked. Whereas I don't think we're there yet in terms of athletics. And, you know, if you take Dublin Track Club and what they've done this year, and there's other people in there as well, like there's Shane McCormick with Phil, and there's Jeremy Lyons, and there's a lot of people out there coaching, but there's no cohesive unit. And I think that's kind of where it's beginning to fall down a little bit. And, you know, we don't have any full-time coaches in terms of athletics on the ground. And I think we're falling behind a little bit. And that's my big worry when you go to an Olympic Games or World Champs and you see, you know, they're on the start line, but yes, we can give them all the facilities and give them all the services. But the fundamental thing is there is that full-time coach element. And I don't think we're there yet. So it's not a level playing field. And like I said, when you look at, say, rowing, they've got full-time coaches. And again, I know it's kind of one discipline. It's rowing. And athletics can be very difficult because you got walks, you got marathons, you got road, you got track, you got field and jumps and throws and all that stuff. So it's a little bit more complex. But I don't think we've really improved
on that over the last couple of years. And I just would be fearful that, you know, when we look and some great kind of stats that Ian kind of listed there, like, you know, when you see smaller countries winning medals in athletics, you kind of ask yourself, well, why aren't we there? You know, with all our successes, say, at Worlds or Europeans and even Olympics in the past, we haven't really grabbed it and moved forward. And that would be one of my big concerns.
Just one last point on that as well, Marie. That goes back to my accountability and transparency thing. And I think Athletics Ireland need to set up some sort of review here as a matter of urgency and say, what's falling short here? What can we do for the athletes? Do some sort of poll of athletes. What can they want? Because most athletes I've spoken to over the last year, they've been slow to get funding, they've been slow to get support, they've had to build their own high performance around them. You know who they are, the Nadia Powers, the likes of Phil Healy's, the people who are obviously even Keir having to go away, and the people in America. And it's kind of going, where is the high performance team that they can just go to as a kind of a central base as opposed to breaking it up? And I think unless that happens in the sport, no, we're not going to be winning medals in track and field for a long time.
Can you see any medal hopes for 20 Paris?
Well, 20, I mean, if
24, 3 years, 24, yeah.
Unfortunately, and again, this is the sad thing. I mean, Thomas Barr is unquestionably a world-class athlete and capable of winning medals in terms of what his time, like, is 47.07. But unfortunately, they've just been improved by 2 seconds literally in the last couple of years. So he's now got improved by nearly 3 seconds if he wants to win a medal. So he'll be the first person to admit that. That's just the reality of his events. But we have people of Kieran McGee, and don't forget, it's not all about the Olympics. There's a big European Championship next year. The European Juniors did very well, and we will win medals at the European stage again. European Indoors, we've won medals, I think, the last 3 or 4 years. But it goes back to your point, why can't we win it? Why can't we at least say, here's one medal hope for Paris? And as of now, I just don't see who that's going to be.
David, just before we finish.
Yeah, no, like, it's almost like, okay, if we're not at a point where we can challenge for podiums, can we at least challenge for finals? And we're not at that level yet either. Like, I think we're still at a point of just qualification. And yes, there's a few kind of people, the outliers that could make a final, like the Kieras, the Toms and some of the walkers like Brendan and stuff like that could be high up. But we're still at a point of like qualification. And I think, you know, we can't really talk about medals until we have people regularly making finals at that level. And we're not there yet. So there's a huge gap.
One last point, Dave, I should probably point out as well. We didn't have a single field event qualifier, you know, across any male or female event. And this is a country we produce Olympic champions in the past. I know it's a long way since Dr. Padakal, but if we can produce, I don't know how many six foot front throw forwards, why can't we produce one decent discus thrower or shot put, male or female, whatever? But, I think that's another side of the sport that seems to be neglected completely.
And then, you know, and like that goes into a wider debate of like, are we targeting specific events? Like if you go back to the Swedish back, I think it was in the noughties, you know, they actually targeted events that they could compete in. So instead of focusing on like the 100, 200 or 4, which are dominated by America and the Caribbean, they actually went and looked at more technical events where they could really kind of coach and work on the technical aspects. But you're right about the shot. I actually interviewed a few of the lads. They walked past me and I was looking at them and they're all big men, but you're kind of going, you know, like rugby so big in Ireland that surely there's people at school level, 18-year-olds, that maybe come to that transition where rugby isn't going to be for them, but they could easily throw the shot. And even going back in history, you have great names that would have kind of transitioned both sports. But maybe there is, and I know we're getting going now, but I can remember when I was in Loughborough and they did a huge talent transfer program. They've done it in Australia as well, where they looked at specific sports and they went from, okay, well, like, you know, if you've got the physical attributes, you know, say for, you know, you're tall and you've got long limbs, they talent transfer them into rowing and then rowing into cycling and even swimming in certain circumstances. And they specifically targeted different sports and the result was they got medals, you know. And like, I'm not saying we have to start going into people and going, right, you're useless at this, getting a swimming pool or getting a boat. But it could be definitely something that, you know, from a wider standpoint, you could really target.
Okay, well, it does sound like there is a lot to do. David Geddick, thank you so much for joining us. Ian, you stay with me because we still have a lot more to get through in this show. But just first of all, an update on the situation with Tyrone and Kerry's All-Ireland semi-final. So that was put back a week because of COVID-19. Earlier today, the county board stated that they may be forced to withdraw from the All-Ireland Championship due to concerns over player welfare. Well, Marty Morrissey went to Tyrone today and he spoke to joint manager Brian Dewar and he said that they will play Kerry as rescheduled. Let's hear from Marty with Brian Dewar.
There was some confusion earlier today about Tyrone's reaction to the six-day postponement of their All-Ireland football semi-final against Kerry. The Ulster champions wanted a postponement of 2 weeks, which wasn't granted. Brian Duher, the Tyrone joint manager, explains their situation.
We asked for 2 weeks to give our players the opportunity to recover from COVID and recover from the effects of it, and hopefully and to get them back into an elite environment or of high intensity football. You know, given 6 days, which we've got the extension, which we're grateful for too, but it's going to be a struggle, to be honest, to get these boys back and get them performing to their ability.
So will they be able to line out on Saturday week in the semi final against Kerry?
Definitely will be a struggle to get them back and to get some of these players back in any sort of shape. You know, preparation will be greatly hindered, but you know, wherever we are, we'll make the best of it and we'll make a call on probably the middle of next week.
Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. So I'd say, like many people, I spent a lot of today sitting down watching Sky Sports News to see what Lionel Messi was going to do. I was there for the whole saga, watching him getting onto the plane, coming off the plane with his kids, following the Instagram and the Twitter. But he has now landed in Paris. I saw him in the T-shirt. Mark Langdon joins me now. Mark, he's signed up. He's now a Paris player.
Yeah, you know, remarkable sort of 4 or 5 days, you know, in the world of football. If you think that, you know, arguably the greatest player in the world, you could argue, I suppose, Cristiano Ronaldo, but I think most people would say that Lionel Messi is the best player in the world, one of the best players ever to have played football, was out of contract for 5 weeks, and nobody tried to sign him because everybody assumed he was staying at Barcelona. Messi thought he was staying at Barcelona, just about everybody did, and then obviously Barcelona, as they look deeper into their finances, realise that that just wasn't going to be possible. And now we've got the prospect of, you know, a Neymar, Mbappe, Lionel Messi front three for Paris Saint-Germain. Very exciting, I think, for if you're just looking at it on the pitch and what those three can do. I think there are probably wider questions as to what this all means for, you know, for European football going forward, you know, with such a collection of stars all in one place.
Yeah, it's going to be a difficult job for Mauricio Pochettino to try and manage all of those players, because I think in the last Champions League season anyway, just watching them, it seemed like he was struggling as it was.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, first of all, what a difference to working at Tottenham, where he didn't get to sign anybody for, was it 2 years? And he goes to Paris and they get him Donnarumma, Hakimi, Ramos, Wijnaldum, Messi. It's so I'm sure it's a problem he'll enjoy having for the time being. The biggest question mark really is how they will perform without the ball, because, you know, on the ball they are going to score goals, they're going to dazzle, but there are moments in just about every Champions League campaign where it doesn't matter how good you are, you'll come up against an excellent team and you have to work hard and you have to defend and you have to track back and you have to do some of the ugly things that quite frankly Paris aren't very good at and haven't been very good at and have been shown up. You know, that Man City game last season in the Champions League, they started brilliantly, and as soon as things went against them, you know, the heads dropped and that they almost sort of chucked the towel in. Messi will improve them in certain areas. He's not going to try to win the ball back. You know, he's long given up that sort of thing at Barcelona. Another question mark is over the future still of Kylian Mbappe. We're talking here about, you know, the potential of that Neymar, Mbappe and Messi front three, but Mbappe's only got 1 year left on his contract, still hasn't signed a new deal. So, you know, I think Paris will be hoping that Messi's arrival kind of persuades Mbappe that they are for real. You know, this project is, you know, the end destination will be the Champions League. But until he actually signs, there is still that sort of nervousness. For all the excitement over Messi, there's still that nervousness about them actually losing, you know, the next greatest footballer in the world.
When it comes to financial fair play then, how have they managed to get all of these players, and if they get to keep Mbappe as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a question a lot of people are asking. Paris I'll say, and you've got to remember, financial fair play is done sort of retrospectively in terms of UEFA. So they won't be looking at the wage bill for this year just yet, as far as Paris are concerned. So, you know, it's in seasons gone past. PSG are claiming that Messi, in some respects, will pay for himself with the amount of commercial deals that they'll be able to do, the amount of interest that he generates. I think that a lot of people have got a question mark as to just how, I suppose, accurate those claims will be. They are trying to offload around about 10 or 11 players off of their wage bill. The problem is, those are the players that really, with all due respect, are not the ones that most teams want. So, you know, Ander, Herrera, Idrissa Gueye, players like that have played in the Premier League previously. And PSG have got the problem that they're paying them a lot of money and, you know, no other team is going to pay them the same. You know, Julian Draxler, a fine footballer, just doesn't play often enough. Mauro Icardi will have known that his sort of minutes will have been sort of difficult to find at the best of times, even before Messi arrived. I mean, how often is he going to play? So I think there are some issues there over financial fair play, and the world will be watching, because there's no doubt that Khalifa, the PSG president, has become stronger within UEFA in the last sort of couple of months with the European Super League and what that meant for a number of the clubs sort of being really sort of pushed out of that kind of discussion at the moment with UEFA. Paris Saint-Germain never signed up for the Super League, and they've become more powerful because of it. The fact that, of course, their Qatari owners have got the World Cup next year, I don't think that should be lost on anyone as to a reason as to why they're looking at Lionel Messi either. You know, to have the poster boy of the World Cup playing for your team is certainly going to help them when it comes to sort of the country that they're trying to portray to the world come next season at the World Cup.
So how much are they paying him a week?
It's around about $1 million a week. That is in that's before tax. So it's reported that Paris Saint-Germain have to pick up a really hefty tax bill, because I think the rumours are that Messi's going to be on around about €25 million net a year, with a €25 million signing on fee net as well. The high earners have to pay an awful amount of tax in France, but Messi won't be paying that. It'll be the tab is being picked up by Paris Saint-Germain.
Wow. And what number will he wear? That's what all the kids want to know.
Yeah, it is. Undecided so far. Neymar did offer him his number. That was rejected by Messi. They've been very guarded with the number. We've seen a few glimpses. They're really sort of drip-feeding the information. There's going to be what looks like sort of a spectacular unveiling this evening. Not sure. I don't think it's started quite yet. And then they'll be able to roll out Messi's new number. Like I say, Neymar did offer him the 10, but it was turned down by Messi, one of his real closest friends. You've also got to feel a little bit sorry for the Barcelona club shop. I'm sure they've got an awful lot of Messi 10s that are not worth quite as much as they were, say, a week ago.
One of my sons is a massive PSG fan, and I booked flights to go to PSG and Lille in October at midterm, thinking, grand, I'll head over there. But you're having to hope of getting tickets now with the Messi saga. It would be impossible. Just a quick one before we finish up as well. Just Real Madrid have initiated criminal and civil proceeding against the Liga president over the competition's new deal with private equity firm CVC. Is this going to be something that is going to cause a bit of hassle, do you think?
Yeah, I do. It's something really where La Liga have got a €2.8 billion cash injection now for their 20 clubs, but it's over a 50-year contract where this private equity firm are taking 10% of all sort of future commercial sort of funds. And Real Madrid and Barcelona, who haven't gone as far as Real Madrid yet, are really questioning as to the the value of the percentage of growth, which is only seen to be at about 5%. And of course, Real Madrid and Barca have most to lose from that because they are the two, even minus Messi and Ronaldo, that generate the most money. So while this is probably a deal that the kind of bottom teams in Spain will feel like it's, you know, it's needed now, and you know they'll worry about the future when that arrives, I think Real Madrid and Barcelona are right to at least question whether, you know, such a small growth over 50 years is the right sort of accounting for it. So it's definitely one to watch out for. The deal has got to go through the clubs yet. It hasn't actually been voted in, but it's not expected to be overturned. So watch out for that one. Real Madrid and Barcelona not happy with La Liga.
Okay, Mark Landing, thank you so much for joining us. It's time for a break.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
And Rio de Janeiro is going to hear the Irish national anthem. It's Michael McKillop heading for the line, and for the third Paralympic Games, it will be gold for McKillop. He's the champion on the treble.
You were probably at that Olympics, Ian.
Yeah, I was just saying, I mean, it's an incredible achievement for both Michael and Jason Smith. I remember seeing them, not on person, but Rio, sorry, Beijing, when they first broke on the scene, and Jason Smith won the 100 and 200 metres, so he was immediately equated to Usain Bolt, and then what McKillop did in the 1500 metres, and to go three Olympics in a row to win that race is a serious achievement. I'm not quite sure if he's at the same level, dare I say, going into Tokyo, another year down the road. Don't forget, it's five years since Rio. But I think for any athlete to compete in four successive Olympics and to go in there with a medal hope is huge. And I think it's not quite the biggest Paralympics team we've had. Like most, a lot of athletes have maybe struggled a little bit to get their preparations done. But I just think for the two of those, they've been, look, I know this is a cliche, but they've been kind of unsung heroes in many ways. And we were chatting to Jason Smith a few weeks ago, and he's a bit like Kelly. He says all the eloquent things. Like he says, it's about leaving a bit of a legacy. It's not about me. It's about being... You know, I want to be the best Paralympian I can be. And I think he has inspired so many people over the years. So I'd be certainly confident about Jason Smith. I think Michael, I think for his challenge alone, which is maybe to qualify this year, and then if he gets into the final, we'll wait and see.
Yeah, anything can happen. Michael McKillop is with us on the line. That's for sure. Michael, how are your preparations going, and how are you feeling about it all?
Yeah, preparations have gone really well. I had my last track session this afternoon, which left a good taste in my mouth. It went well. So preparations have gone well. I was away on camp in Portugal as well, doing a bit of heat training just to acclimatise to the heat, and then worked in the institute in up north in the heat chamber to get used to the humidity, so that it's not such a big shock to my body. But I'm feeling good, and I'm really excited to get on that plane on Thursday morning and get to Tokyo and get down to business.
Yeah, well, you'd be so familiar with the whole setup anyway, already having been to three games and having achieved success at games as well. Just in the run-up to these Paralympic Games, you've been injured a little bit over the last year or so, and I know you've said that that extra year has probably done you well to have that time to recover from injury.
Yeah, for sure. Being selfish, obviously, for my career and my fitness, that year really did give me the opportunity to get into the sort of shape that I know I can get into, and I haven't been in that shape for many years. But I've been really consistent over the last 18 months, and I've really put in a lot of hard work and dedicated myself and sacrificed a lot more than I probably used to when I was a child. Whenever you're getting older, you have to do a little bit more stuff to keep on top of your body and making sure that it's ready to train consistently. And yeah, I'm really, really excited to get myself out there and experience another games. It's my fourth, but every games is different, and I'm a senior athlete now in the setup, and it'll be really nice to experience it with young, talented athletes that can go and experience their first games.
Fourth games is pretty phenomenal, Michael. Can you actually take a minute and appreciate all that you've achieved already?
Yeah, for sure. Whenever you get closer to the end of your career, I think you spend time kind of looking back, as well as obviously looking forward. Obviously, my ambition is to go out to Tokyo to get back on the podium that I missed out in 2019. But I look back at my career now and see how much wonderful things I've been able to do in my career. Obviously, winning medals for the island of Ireland is my number one ambition every single time I step on that track and I put on the Irish vest. But I've had so many amazing memories and I've enjoyed my career up to this date, and I hope to enjoy it even more when I get to Tokyo.
I was there in 2012 when both yourself and Jason won medals, and it was amazing to see the two of you together, and to be still on this journey together is pretty special as well.
Yeah, me and Jason obviously are best friends, and I think sharing the journey with him from day one, like I said in a news article over the week, it's like we were found in the same day at ALSA, at a kind of talent ID day, I was 15 and he was 17, and ever since then we've been on every championships together, we've been shared rooms at every championships, and I guess we've won medals together, and I think that's the thing, that the driving force that keeps us both going. Well, definitely for me anyway, I kind of like to match Jason, and I think Jason likes to match my medal count, and I think going into Tokyo I'm in a slightly different, more stranger situation this year, where I'm not racing in my category as such, so I'm racing against guys that are slightly milder than me, a new category, but that's not an excuse. I'm going out there to win a medal again. I'm going to be up against it more than I usually am at Paralympic Games, but I still believe I can go out there, perform and do my country proud.
Well, Michael, best of luck, and we look forward to watching you. We'll be across it on RTE Sport across the couple of weeks as well. Best of luck and safe travelling, and we will check in with you soon. Michael is an Allianz ambassador, and Allianz Ireland have been proud partners of Paralympics Ireland since 2010 and is committed to promoting diversity and inclusion across the sporting community in Ireland. That is all we have time for. Thank you so much for coming in. Happy birthday to Roy Keane.
Yeah, happy birthday to Roy Keane, 50 years old today.
Brilliant. Tara Stewart is up next.